The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
This is What the Heck with Mike Heck on MMAfighting.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Heck.
What the heck?
Well, hello there, everybody, and welcome to an all-new edition of What the Heck here on MMAfighting.com. Hope you're all rested and recovered from the craziness of UFC 261, which went down Saturday night in Jacksonville, Florida. The fans were back. They were loud. They were on fire. There were some things I could have done without. The wooing was back. I didn't miss that very much. There was some certain behaviors towards certain fighters on the card that wasn't great. But all in all, it was pretty surreal hearing the fans in that way for the first time in over a year. But three title fights, two champions retained. Valentina Shevchenko with an incredible performance in her stoppage of Jessica Andrade, as good as you can do it. I know the storylines, the hype are kind of behind the other two title fights, but Valentina Shevchenko was absolutely phenomenal. She deserves a ton of credit. She is going to be a tough out for anybody for a long time at 125 pounds. Kamaru Usman knocked out Jorge Masvidal in the main event in the second round. Man, that was just wild. I mean, that's going to be more than likely on the shortlist for knockout of the year at the end of 2021. And if it's not on the short list, that means we're going to see some absolutely ridiculous knockouts the rest of this year. But what a performance by Usman. And then Rose Namajunas stops Zhang Wei Li in the first round with that beautiful head kick to recapture the strawweight title. Title fights are really interesting. They ended in dominant and violent fashion. Of course, some scary stuff in the middleweight bout between Uriah Hall and Chris Weidman. By now, you all know what happened. You probably have all seen it. It was just nasty. It was gruesome. You don't want to see that happen to anybody. But he had successful surgery on his leg on Sunday. He was told, and he said this on Instagram, he's going to be on crutches for 8 weeks before he can walk on his own. He could be back to training in 6 to 12 months, he was told. And I really hope that's the case. I mean, whether he comes back and fights or not, that's one thing. But I just want him to be in the best place possible. Like, he could walk around, he's as healthy as he can be. And I know I'm not alone on this, but we wish him all the best. I will say I did reach out to Uriah Hall's team to try to get him on the show this week. He's taking some time off. He's going on vacation. At this point, he feels like, between talking to Joe Rogan, talking to the media in the back on Saturday, he feels like he said all he needs to at this point. And I've said this many times already, you got to feel for Uriah Hall too. It's unfortunate what happened to Chris Weidman, but I know how much this fight meant to Uriah Hall. Chris Weidman was the first man to defeat him back in 2010. This fight was nearly 11 years in the making. Hall wanted this fight very badly. He was looking forward to it. It's something that first loss, something he's been stewing on for a long time. He felt this was a winnable fight. And I mean, he got the win, but certainly not the way he would have wanted. So you definitely got a feel for him. And then the main card kicked off. Anthony Smith, he looked great in his fight with Jimmy Crute. That one ended in unfortunate circumstances as well. Another leg injury. This wasn't as severe, but it was still bad for Jimmy Crute. Referee and the doctors specifically stopped the fight before the second round. Jimmy Crute wanted to go. He was yelling. He was screaming. He was game. But he just couldn't put weight on that leg. Anthony Smith gets the win. And that fight was awesome for as long as it lasted. But we'll be talking more about UFC 261 on the show. We got four great guests. Let us run down the lineup and we'll get right into it. Wrapping us up, if you missed it due to all the UFC 261 craziness, I had the chance to speak with the former UFC heavyweight champion Frank Mir to recap his pro boxing debut on the Triller card. He fought Steve Cunningham, went the distance, six rounds, lost a decision, and we discussed the fight, the judges, fighting for Triller, Oscar De La Hoya's commentary, which you could hear during the fight, if he'd fight for Triller again, and much more. A couple quick warnings before you see that. One, the interview happened on Wednesday or Thursday of last week, so there is a UFC 261 question in there, so ignore that. The other, I was helping my parents get rid of some stuff before they put their house in the market in Boston, so the interview took place there, not here. The sound and the video quality isn't what you're typically used to seeing, but it's still a great interview with Frank Mir. You'll hear that at the end of the show. Ryan Bader is going to join us, the Bellator heavyweight champion. He advanced to the semifinals of the light heavyweight Grand Prix with a win over Lyoto Machida. He has his next opponent lined up. That is another former UFC fighter, Corey Anderson. We discussed that, the whole Grand Prix, everything going on with him. Darth Bader will join us later on. Speaking of UFC 261, one half of the fight of the night on Saturday, Jeff Molina will join us to recap that crazy fight with Arichi Lang, his first UFC win, first UFC bonus, and looking forward to that conversation. We're going to kick things off with the man who was in attendance Saturday night, a man who had a vested interest in the main event for the welterweight title in Jacksonville, back on the show and kicking us off this week, Colby Covington. All right, kicking us off this week is a man whose name was brought up an awful lot during the UFC 261 fight week, and he wasn't even fighting on the card. So, of course, he made headlines when Dana White said before the main event between Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal went down, and it was reiterated after Usman's knockout win that the next fight to make for the welterweight title is the rematch between Usman and my guest at this time, Colby Chaos Covington, who is kind enough to join us right now. Colby, thank you for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me, Mike. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. You know, we started this thing a long time ago together, and it's good to still be here today at the top of the game, number one in the world, chasing world title fights and world championships. So it's a pleasure to speak to you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And I know you haven't done a lot of interviews since the win over Tyron Woodley in September, but I guess, how are you, man? Like, it's been a minute. What's been going on in the life of Colby Covington and the world of Colby Covington Incorporated over the last several months?
Yeah, it's been a great couple months. You know, we've been working hard in the gym tirelessly, you know, just working on the evolution of our game and just making sure that we're well-rounded and we're ready to go and staying ready on a moment's notice at all times. So, you know, things didn't fall my way in the fight world. I didn't get the fights that I thought I was going to get in the time I was going to get them. I stayed ready for those backup fights in case someone fell out. But now it's time for round two with Marty Juiceman, you know, the CEO of EPO. So I can't wait to get back in there with him. And I just love all the hype he's getting as being the greatest fighter of all time, the pound for pound number one. So it's just going to make it that much more credible when I go out there and smash him next time around.
I'm interested in this because did the UFC want you to be the backup for the fight on Saturday? Cause I know Dana brought it up like briefly at the post-fight press conference, said Usman may have had a problem with that in some way. Like what happened? Were you supposed to be the backup fighter for that?
Yeah, I was supposed to, but you know, Marty Juiceman and Street Judas, that fragile guy from Miami, you know, they both refused it. They said, hey, if anybody gets injured or has to pull out last minute, we're not fighting Colby. It's a stylistic change, and we're not ready for that stylistic change on short notice. So, you know, it's pretty clear to me and it's clear to the fans, you know, who's been hiding from me and who's running. And, you know, these guys are scared of me right now. So I'm just waiting to get a hold of one of them now, and that's Marty Juiceman. You know, hopefully he doesn't take too long on the sidelines. I know he's saying that he needs some time with his daughter and he wants some time off, but you know, it's time for round two. Don't delay this any more than it needs to be.
So obviously there's a lot to discuss with you. First off, you were in the building on Saturday, the first event in over a year in a sold out arena. Before we get into what happened in the fight, and how that affects you, obviously, what was it like being there and just seeing the fans back? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. The only reason I went out there was for the fans. You know, there's a reason I'm the people's champion, and, you know, the people love me and I love the people. So I kind of wanted to feel that energy with the crowd and the arena again, and really just some normalcy, you know, some normalcy back in our lives. You know, it's been the scamdemic and they're keeping us locked down and quarantine and this and that. So it was good to get back in the building with people and interact and have that normalcy back in our lives. Big thank you to Dana White for making it happen. And Ronnie D, Ron DeSantis, the best governor in America right now, you know, making it all possible so we could go back to Florida with the UFC and put on some great fights for the fans and have the fans back doing what they regularly do. And that's fun, be entertained and enjoy the show.
Was that a camouflage suit you were wearing on Saturday? Was that what that was?
That's right. That was a camouflage suit for all my friends in the military and law enforcement. You know, nothing but love for those guys. Everybody knows I fight for the troops and, you know, I'm inspired by them and motivated by them. And they give me a lot of my purpose every day in my training and my purpose when I step into the octagon, that I'm fighting for those that fight for us and fight for our freedoms and sacrifice their lives for the red, white, and blue so we can, you know, live our free lives here in America.
So let's go back to sort of like the middle of fight week, because Dana White was doing a bunch of interviews, a lot of media throughout the build to the card, and talking about the fight between Usyk and Masvidal. And he said essentially that, listen, we're giving Masvidal the rematch, but then after that, Colby gets the winner. So how did you react to that statement and that vote of confidence from the big boss that you were next in line, at least in his eyes?
It was good. It was, it's one step, you know, we still got to get Marty and Ali Abdelaziz on the other hook. You know, those guys, they're refusing to fight me. You know, there's a reason he ran it back right away with that fragile guy, Street Judas Masvidal. They knew it was an easy lick, an easy payday. You know, the guy's got almost 20 losses on his record. He's literally the definition of journeyman. So, you know, Jorge, we found out, you know, he's fragile. He has no chin. So, you know, of course he wanted to expose all that hype in front of the world. And good job, you guys did that. But now who are you going to fight? There's no one else. There's no other lightweights for Marty and Ali to pick. There's no other former teammates that are another blown up lightweight that you guys can beat on. It's time for round two with Colby Covington and Marty Juiceman. And, you know, this is going to be really the test of two of the best fighters of all time in this weight class.
Okay, so you were there. You were right there to watch it all play out on Saturday night. And Usman won the first round. No surprise. Masvidal was taking some shots. He was smiling. Got taken down. He worked his way back up. And it seemed like he might have had like a little bit of momentum headed into the second round. And then Usman knocked him cold with that big right hand. And most people thought like if the fight was going to end in that way, it would have been the other way. Were you surprised the way the fight actually ended?
No, I wasn't really surprised. I noticed that there, I mean, George, first off, that fragile dude, Street Judas Masvidal, you know, he doesn't like to train. He has no work ethic. I mean, his everyday life, Mike, that guy's, you know, popping pills, doing freaking drugs, partying, you know, cheating on his wife, you know, lying to his kids. So the guy's just a piece of shit, you know, and finally things caught up to him. Karma bit him in the ass. And, you know, he's getting older now. What's he, almost 40 years old now? So the guy's past his time. He shouldn't even be in there at the top of the level. And Marty realized that, you know, he took him down because, you know, that fragile guy, Street Judas Masvidal, has no takedown defense. Took him down, get him gassed, get him tired, get him gassed out, and then boom, started swinging haymakers. So I knew it was just a matter of time until he was going to catch him with a big shot. And, you know, it's nothing special just because Marty beat this journeyman, you know, with a bunch of hype on him. It's nothing special. I wasn't impressed with that fight. You know, if anything, dude, I saw a lot of weaknesses in his game, Mike. You know, of course, the media is not going to talk about the weaknesses. They want to just talk about the strength and this crazy knockout and this and that, this new evolved game of his. But, you know, I saw him get tired in that first round. You know, he was swinging heavy and he got in the wrestling exchange and he was tired when he got back to his feet. So if he fights me like that, Mike, I promise you it will be and new.
So when people are starting to compare him to George St. Pierre right now, what is your reaction to that? Because like it's either like he's on the road there, or some people think he's there, and some people look at like the different sorts of generations of the sport and say that, you know, with the streak he's on, the guys he's fought, you know, the game has evolved so much at this point, like maybe he surpassed George St. Pierre. So what are your thoughts on those comparisons at this point in his run?
I don't really know much about GSP's run. Like, I don't know how many title fight wins he had. So, you know, I don't know if you want to compare that to, you know, Usman's title fight wins. But, you know, there's a lot of fights. You know, that fight with me and Usman, you know, you can't, that's not a definitive win. You know, he should be wanting to rematch and prove the critics wrong on that fight, because, you know, I was winning most of that fight. You know, it was an early stoppage. It was a bad stoppage. There was a ton of terrible breaks in that fight. The nut shot, you know, that he called when I kicked him in the liver, that's a momentum change. So, you know, that wasn't a win. You know, that's not a real win. If I would have won like that, I would have wanted to rematch right away and prove to the critics, prove to all the doubters, prove to all the media that, you know, that's not the way you win. That's not a convincing win. And I wouldn't be satisfied with that. So, you know, hopefully Marty will want to come back and rematch soon and won't be hiding from me for too much longer.
So I probably got like 25 to 30 DMs on Instagram earlier last week when you posted that photo with a woman, and people were asking me like, who is that? And I didn't even know how to respond. Who was that?
Man, that's so embarrassing, Mike. You know, that was the mother of his two children. His wife still right now to this day, because they haven't legally got the divorce yet. So that was that fragile dude, Judas Masvidal's wife and mother of his two children. And you know what's disgusting about that, Mike? Is the reason I put that up, because first off, we go back, you know, 10 years. So she's a family friend of mine. You know, I met her before George, and she's always been good to me, you know, and a good lady. So, you know, she's just a friend who we were just catching up talking. And it's so crazy, because after we hung out, I went and looked on Google, and I looked on the internet, and I'm like, type in the Google search, Jorge's wife, Jorge's mother of his children. And they tried, that fragile dude, Judas Masvidal, tried to scrub the internet of his own wife and mother of his two children and say that his manager's daughter, Iman Kawa, was the wife of him and the mother of his children. So, you know, I was just putting some truth out there, Mike, some facts, you know, so you can't run from or hide from the truth or facts. You know, that was Jorge Masvidal, that fragile dude's wife, and that's the mother of his children. You can't hide that. No more lying to the people.
So what made you want to post that picture?
Oh, just, you know, just to let him know, you know, that, hey, man, I see you, dude. I see how fake you are. You know, I see that you tried to literally erase her from existence, bro. Like, that's the mother of your children. She's carrying your kids. I know the piece of shit you are, that you fragile motherfucker, George Masvidal. I know how fragile. I know the piece of shit you are to your wife, to your two kids. You know, I know how much stress you're creating in their lives and the things that you're making their lives, you know, that much harder. So, you know, I just wanted to put it in front of his face, Mike, and let him know that, you know, you can't run from the truth or hide from the truth anymore. I'm going to expose you of your fakeness.
He did an interview with ESPN with Ariel leading up to the fight, and he talked about the situation between the two of you guys. He basically said, like, both of you guys got kicked out of ATT after, like, a near skirmish or something, but then he got brought back into the fold and you weren't. And I know you've kind of told your side of the story, but can you give a reaction to what Jorge was saying about, you know, both of you guys got kicked out, they wanted to bring him back and just kind of let you do your own thing?
Yeah, I can give you an elaboration, Mike, into truth, into facts, in the real side of the story, because once again, that fragile dude, Judas Masvidal, is not telling the facts, not telling the truth of the story. He would come into the gym every day I'm training, you know, getting ready for my fight with Usman, screaming across the gym, oh, Colby, I'm going to fuck you up, I'm going to baptize you, blah, 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 and just make a scene. So, like, none of the pro fighters could train. It was disrupting the training. So Dan Lambert, you know, he had to make a decision. He's like, hey, you guys are both out. This is creating too much problems over at the gym, and it's messing up the chemistry. So you guys are gone. So a couple weeks go by. He's still begging to go back, blah, blah, blah. Finally, Dan decides to bring him back, and he also wanted to bring me back. And he's like, hey, Colby, you know, I'd like you to come back. You know, the pandemic's starting, or it's, you know, it's over. And you know, I made a mistake. I want you back on the team. But I said, Dan, you know, thanks, but no thanks. You know, I'm not going back. You know, it wasn't a good situation for me over at that gym, ATT. You know, there was a lot of drama, a lot of people starting stuff. But you know what's funny about it, Mike, is all these people starting stuff, they only scream at me when coaches are in between them across the gym. If they really wanted to do something, Mike, they would have came up to me face to face. Like Dustin Soria, oh, it's on site when I see Colby. Dustin, you know it's not on site. I'll put you down so quickly. You were my easy rounds. When I got tired, I'd go with you just to play with you like my little dummy. So if it was really on site, you would have came up to me. And that fragile dude, Judas Masvidal, same thing. If you really were about that, like, you come up to me, you try and start some shit, but no, you just want to talk to the media like you're all big, build yourself up, But that's not the truth. And the truth is not what you tried to say, that, oh, they didn't invite Colby back. They just wanted him back. No, they wanted me back too, Mike. But I didn't want to go back. I had better coaches over at Colby Covington Incorporated and MMA Masters. You know, my jiu-jitsu coach, Daniel Valverde, we've been really working really hard on my submissions. And I just feel like I'm a finishing machine. I feel on top of the world. This is the best jiu-jitsu coach I've ever had. And it just so happens he's a judo coach. Very good trips and good takedowns. So I'm learning a lot there from him too. And then my kickboxing coach, Cesar Carnero, we just work so hard on timing and just really sitting down on our punches and just being efficient with my energy and really maximizing my volume. So I just feel like I'm on another level with him. And my strength and conditioning coach, Jonathan Lopez, amazing strength and conditioning coach. That guy's a wizard, and he's really just taking my cardio as the cardio king to the next level. So I'm thankful for my situation. I didn't want to go back, and that's the facts. That's truth. And you can go ask Dan Lambert.
Not too long ago, it seemed like the fight between you and Masvidal was going to happen. I mean, he ended up getting the title fight. I'm curious, like, what happened there? Because it seemed like after you beat Tyron Woodley, there was talks about Masvidal maybe running it back with Nate. And then as soon as you beat Tyron, it was like, nope, we're not doing that. We're going to do Masvidal versus Covington. There's rumors out there about maybe the two of you guys coaching the resurgence of the Ultimate Fighter. It seemed like this is the direction everybody wanted to go. What happened with that from your perspective?
Well, not just from my perspective, Mike, what happened from the UFC perspective, from Dana White's perspective, Hunter Campbell's perspective is the truth. You know, plain and simple, that fragile dude, Judas Masvidal, did not want to fight me. After I beat Woodley, they were trying to match this up in October, November, December. You know, he would refuse every month. No, I'm not fighting Colby. No, I don't like that matchup. Oh, he's too tough for me. Oh, we used to train, blah, blah, blah. So he's talking all this smack in the media, saying he's going to baptize me, saying he's doing this on site. But then when it's time to fight an octagon for millions of dollars, you know, oh, now you don't want to fight. You know, now you're scared. So they couldn't get that fight together, plain and simple, Mike. And the last ditch effort they tried to make was making us the Ultimate Fighter coaches. But plain and simple, he said, no, I don't want to be Ultimate Fighter coaches against him. I don't want to fight Colby. You know, I want a rematch, or I want to fight Nate Diaz or some other lightweight or washed up scrub. So, you know, everybody knows who's my son. You know, that fragile dude, Judas Masvidal, is my son. I am his father, and he knows who daddy is. And now all his hype is gone. 10 seconds of fame are out of here. And, you know, we're never going to fight. I have nothing to prove to him. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to starch Marty Fake Newsman, and it's on to bigger and better things.
So the way Dana White was speaking throughout the week, I thought we might see you get in that octagon with Usman, kind of do the, like a flashback to the early days of the UFC where the next guy walks in and they do the face off. Why didn't we see that?
We didn't see that because Marty didn't want it. And just like he doesn't want this fight. He does not want round two. If I was the easy lick, Mike, he would have came after me to rematch me right away. There's a reason he took the easy payday with that fragile dude, Judas Masvidal. You know, he knew it was an easy fight. The guy's got almost 20 losses on his record. He's a journeyman, and Marty knew that. So Marty's been in there with me. He knows how tough I am. He knows I took multiple rounds off him, concussed him, wobbled him, almost had it finished if he didn't fake a timeout and have to get a breather. So he knows how tough I am, and he's refusing to fight me. He doesn't want anything to do with me. He'd rather retire, honestly, Mike, than get round two with me locked in that octagon.
Do you think this fight happens?
I don't know. I hope so. I want it. There's nothing more that I want. I want to rewrite my wrongs. I want to prove to the world that I'm a better fighter than him. And I want to prove to the world that I'm the greatest pound for pound fighter in the world right now. So I hope it happens. If it doesn't happen, it'll only be because of him, that he doesn't want to fight. He might walk away from the sport, or, you know, I need more time with my daughter, or this and that. So, you know, I hope it happens, but we'll have to see.
Have you talked to Dana on Saturday, or have you talked to him since Saturday about this?
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit Saturday after the fight. He's like, yeah, you're next. We're going to make that fight. We're going to get that fight done. So it's the fight to make, man. It's what the fans want. It's what Dana White, the UFC, wants. You know, even Stephen A. Smith is out there on First Take this morning campaigning for that fight. So he even knows that that's the fight to make. So, you know, I'm ready to go. You know, we don't need to delay this any more than it needs to be. You know, hopefully it'll be back in Florida, you know, doing a favor for Ron DeSantis, for him doing a favor for us, and let us be the first sport back with fans. So, you know, hopefully we get it done sooner than later.
Yeah, I mean, there's some interesting matchups coming up in your division. Of course, Leon Edwards fighting Nate Diaz May 15th. Gilbert Burns is fighting Stephen Thompson on July 10th. You know, Usman fought Edwards a few years ago. He's on a nice run. He just beat Gilbert Burns. He hasn't fought Nate or Wonderboy yet. So Is there any part of you concerned that one of these guys could jump the queue, so to speak?
No, not at all. I mean, Dana White made a promise to me, you know, Hunter Campbell, they made promises to me. You know, I know these guys wouldn't break their promises. I know these guys are men of their word. You know, these are good, hardworking men, blue collar men, you know, that have rise up to the top of the industry. So, you know, I think I take these guys' word at what they said. And, you know, everybody knows I'm number one in the world. I'm number one in the rankings. You can't deny that. That's facts. So this is the fight that needs to happen. You know, Marty should want to jump at this fight right away, man. You should want to prove to the critics and the doubters, you know, that, oh, you're the best in the world. You're the convincing. You want to be the pound for pound number one. You want to be the GOAT. You got to go through me again and prove to the world that that wasn't a fluke, because it was a fluke. You know, I was winning that fight, early stoppage, fake timeouts, this and that. So let's go, Marty Juiceman. Stop wasting time. We know you're the CEO of EPO, but it's time to get exposed in front of the world.
The stars were out in full force on Saturday night, Colby. You were there. Some of the UFC's biggest names were there. Tom Brady was out there with the Tampa Bay Bucks, and even Jake Paul was in the building, had the little run-in with DC, Octagon side. I don't know if you were out there for that, but I mean, what have you made of this Jake Paul phenomenon? I've been dying to ask you about this. The fight with Ben Askren did reportedly 1.5 million pay-per-view buys. What have you made with this, him being at the event and everything that's going on with him?
You know, everything that's going on with him is hilarious. This guy's an amateur. You know, Snake Paul is literally a bum. You know, he's a Disney YouTube star. You know, he's not a real fighter. He's an amateur. He's a nobody. You know, I'd literally smack the pubes off his face. But, you know, what I make of him is he's just, you know, looking to get hype and build himself up as a real fighter. He's not a real fighter, Mike. This guy's a nobody from the streets. That last fight with Ben Askren was a work. They made that a fix. Askren took a dive for the money, and that's that. You know, I don't really take much more from that circus of Triller. You know, it's literally a circus. You know, it's the clown show. So no one's got time on their Saturday night at midnight to listen to an hour fucking special by Justin Bieber in between fights. Come on, this is a joke. This is joke time. So let's get back to the real business, like the UFC, you know, where we got real stars coming out. Tom Brady, Cuba Gooding Jr., you know, Mike Evans was in attendance, a couple other NFL players, a bunch of UFC fighters, and, you know, just back to normalcy and back to regular life. You know, fans in the arena, energy, electricity, and, you know, the best entertainment show in the world.
What if he starts calling your name? He's calling out Masvidal. He's called out Connor. Looks like Tyron Woodley wants that fight now, your old buddy. What if he starts saying your name? I'm shocked he hasn't, if we're being honest.
You're shocked, Mike?
I'm shocked he hasn't said your name, even just for hype purposes. I'm surprised, honestly.
No, he wouldn't do that, Mike. He's not that stupid. He's only looking for old, retired, washed-up fighters. He's not looking for a guy in his prime who's the top of the weight class who can actually throw hands. He's looking for wrestlers, jiu-jitsu fighters, you know, guys that supposedly did MMA, but they're literally, you know, 40 and 50 year old virgins, you know, and he's not going to call out someone that actually knows how to fight.
Nick Diaz is there on Saturday as well. Did you run into him in any way?
He was a couple seats down from me, front row, but you know, he knows better than that to pipe up to me. You know, he's a Stockton soy boy. You know, he's not going to mess with MAGA bombs, you know, and someone was asking me, like, oh, you think Nick's going to fight again? I'm like, I don't know. He might, you know, if he does, it's just going to be a cash grab. It's not going to be anything like he's a legit threat to anyone. And if honestly, like, you saw Tom Brady in the building, you saw Cuba Gooding Jr. in the building, you saw all these other A-list celebrities in the building and it's like, are they getting in the octagon? Probably not. So, you know, I don't believe Nick Diaz is getting in the octagon as likely as the Tom Brady is going to get in the octagon.
Yeah. I mean, Tom Brady in the octagon, I don't want to see that. Let Tom Brady sling that football down the field. He won us a lot of championships here in New England, and he's the GOAT, no doubt about that. So as far as you go in this title shot, the rematch that you're hoping to get, when do you want that? I mean, I assume you want this fight to happen as soon as possible. Usman just fought twice in like 70-something days. Things are starting to fill up pay-per-view main event-wise and title fight-wise. Has a date even been discussed at all, like a time frame, anything?
Yeah, I was talking with Hunter Campbell today, you know, and, you know, we were talking about a date, August, September. I think that's something that makes sense for Marty. It gives him, you know, 4, 5, 6 months to get ready for it. So, you know, that hopefully it's August, September. You know, I don't want to delay it later in the year and talk to over November. You know, just let's get this out of the way, you know, especially because Marty Juiceman was saying in the lead up to this fight, oh, I want to fight two or three more times this year. So he said it himself, Mike, he wants to fight two or three more times this year. I'm the next guy in line. There's no one else to make. And, you know, you didn't take any damage in that fight with that fragile guy, Judas Masvidal. So it was a flawless victory. You took the guy down. You got the big haymaker knockout. Good for you. You didn't take no damage. So there's no excuses to delay this fight any later than September at the absolute latest.
Would you consider any other matchup? Like if Usman can't do that date or they go a different direction for some reason, is there any other fight you consider at this point, or is the title fight or bust?
No, I'm the money fight in the UFC, man. Usman's not even a draw. He doesn't draw numbers. He doesn't move the needle. The guy's literally a nobody. Yeah, you've had a good career. You beat some guys that literally were washed up after I beat him. You followed in the footsteps of me, tried to copy my literally carbon copy blueprint. So, you know, I don't see anything special with him. If she doesn't want to fight, you know, I fight for paychecks, man. I'm a draw. If the UFC needs me and they need to make a big fight, you know, or save a card, I'm always ready to fight, man. I stay ready 24/7, 365. So, you know, I'm just going to keep doing my business. And if the UFC needs me to come step up and fight a big fight, I'm going to come step up and prove that I'm the best in the world, because that's all I want to do. I'm trying to prove my legacy and my greatness right now. And that's just by fighting the biggest fights in the world.
Speaking of big names and big fights, have you seen Conor's trying to get Usman's attention now? Have you seen that on social media over the last couple of days?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard about it. And, you know, that's obviously just Conor just trying to get some hype, get some headlines. Come on, dude. The guy just got knocked out by Dustin Poirier. Come on. Are you serious? You want a title shot at 170? Dude, you're getting beat up by literally gatekeeper lightweights. And now you want to come to the top of the 170 welterweight division. Everybody knows what Conor's doing. He's not really going to do that. He's not going to come up and fight welterweights. He's just doing that to grab attention, to grab headlines, make people think he's being taken seriously, because honestly, he's a joke. He's the laughingstock in the MMA community. And even to casual fans, because they're just like, man, Conor's washed up. He's done. He made all that money with his whiskey. He made all that money for the Mayweather fight. He has no motivation. Nothing gets him up early in the morning to go fight. So, you know, he tries to save for his kids, you know, but man, the guy's done, man. He has nothing left in the tank.
You think Dustin beats him again?
Yeah, and that's not like saying Dustin Poirier is any good or like, you know, is anything special, because the guy's not. Like, the guy's a gatekeeper, a lightweight. He's nothing more, you know. All in the big fights, he always get knocked out and beaten. So, you know, he's a jobber. That's the definition of what Dustin Poirier is. And he's a fake. He's a clown, man. Trying to start that charity and say that he's all about the good fight and, oh, he's trying to give back to kids. No, it's not. That's a tax write-off for your business. Tell the people the truth, man. I know the real person you are, Dustin Poirier. You're a piece of shit person behind the scenes. You won't take pictures with fans. You won't do this and that. You don't treat nobody good. You act like you're better than people with an ego. So don't act like you're special just because you beat Conor McGregor after his time and when he was washed up.
So last thing, I mean, you're saying hopefully August, September, you're in there, you fight Usman again for the welterweight title. You've said many times since the first fight, you believed you got the big fat hose job from the referee, Mark Goddard, not just for the stoppage of the fight, you mentioned it here, but the stoppages of the action as well. Masvidal got his rematch. You want your rematch. What's the message for Kamaru Usman right now?
Oh, the message is, you know, you're trying to tell me you need activity. I came back and won a fight. Did George, you know, that fragile guy, win a fight when you beat him 50-43? You already beat him convincing and it was a dominant win. And then you took him rematch right away because you knew it's an easy lick. I came back and won a fight and beat a guy that you beat for the world championship, you know, a former UFC champion. And, you know, I've had three or four of those on my resume in my last couple of fights. So as wins. So, you know, this is the fight that needs to happen. This is the fight the fans want. Give the people what they want, Marty. You know, give Dana White and the UFC what they want. Come show your greatness. Come prove that you're the welterweight GOAT. Come prove that you're the pound-for-pound number one. Because I know I'm going to stop you. This is going to be a completely different outcome round two. You're not going to have Mark Goddard to save your life, give you fake timeouts for fake nut shots when I kicked you in the liver. That completely changed the momentum of the whole entire fight. I would have finished him right there. No more faking eye poke on the other eye. I barely touched your left eye. You're crying on your right eye for 5 minutes. Getting a break, you know, so there's no more change in momentum and no more cheating. You know, it's got to be done with Marty Juiceman, the CEO of EPO.
Colby, it's been 8 months, but we finally got to catch back up. I truly appreciate it. I think the rematch makes a whole lot of sense at this point. Like you said, people want to see it. Dana wants to see it. And all the best to you in getting that fight, Colby. I'm glad we're able to do this once again. And thank you for the time as always. Any parting words for the peeps?
Parting words for the peeps is it was great to see you all again. You know, great to have you back in the arena. And, you know, I can't wait for my next fight. I'm not going to disappoint.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Colby Covington kicking us off. Never disappoints. It's always an interesting conversation with the former UFC interim welterweight champion. And I can tell you, people want to see this fight. They want to see the rematch with Kamaru Usman. I get people hitting me up on social media all the time. I want to see the rematch. Colby's the number one contender. Let's do it. It makes sense for a number of reasons. This is the fight I picked on to the next one. AK Lee did not go with that one. I went with it for, like I said, a number of different reasons. You can go back and check out On to the Next One, me and AK's matchmaking podcast, wherever you can find your favorite podcast, wherever you listen, and you can go back and see why I think this fight makes a lot of sense. But we're going to move ahead to Jeff Molina. Just picked up his first UFC win in Jacksonville and his first UFC bonus on Saturday night. Here he is, Jeff Molina on What the Heck. All right, let us say hello to one of the big winners from this past Saturday's UFC 261 event in Jacksonville, one half of the fight of the night, and what a fight it was. He defeated Arici Lang via unanimous decision. Jeff Molina joins us right now, sunglasses on. He's wearing a T-shirt, so that means you're probably still in Florida. How are you, man?
I'm good, brother. Yeah, still in Florida, but yeah, doing well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Congratulations on the win and the fight, man. It was just so fun to watch. How does it all feel less than 48 hours later as we record this?
Feels good, man. It feels good to get the debut out the way. Fight of the night isn't the type of bonus I want. I want performance of the night, but man, I'll take it, right? 50 Gs.
You got your 50 Gs. And I know you were supposed to debut in January before the COVID test and everything, which obviously sucked for you, but to be able to make that first walk in Jacksonville in front of a fired up crowd like that, I would assume that this was a tremendous consolation prize, was it not?
Absolutely, man. So the initial debut was scheduled November 14th. I signed the contract for it, I think the day after Contender Series. I think it was like 24 hours after Contender Series. Scheduled November 14th, it was Zarouk. I had a fracture in my leg, but I was still going to fight. Through training camp, and then Zarouk got COVID, so they rescheduled it for January. And then I caught the vid. And that sucked, man. That sucked. So finally having that debut after back-to-back camps, it felt really fucking good, dude.
How would you describe the feeling of getting the Bruce Buffer intro in that arena? Like, I know you fought many times, been in the martial arts game for many years, but, you know, the octagon jitters we always hear about, they had to have been there in that moment, right? Like, Bruce is versus saying your name, everyone's going crazy. Like, were you feeling the jitters before the fight started?
Yeah, I don't know, man. So the whole Bruce thing, that it's cool as shit, man. Like, I picture that in my head like a million times, but my teammate Julian Marquez talks about like drawing energy from the crowd. That's never really been something I've done, but I was like, hey man, I'll try anything once. So he told me before the fight started, since this is the first event back with fans, to turn to the crowd, raise your arms up, and just kind of take some of that energy in. So I did that, and then I kind of felt the same thing with Bruce as he was making the announcement, saying my name. It was like I was kind of just looking at him and like feeling that vibe. So I don't know if it's placebo, but I felt something. I'm not sure what it was, but it was cool. It was cool.
And he looked like a million bucks too. He was on fire all night.
Yeah, he was on one, man. It was kind of cool him introducing my opponent too. My opponent has like a cool nickname, and yeah, I was feeling that, and I was like, oh wait, I can't fuck him, you know, like that's my opponent. We're about to get into a fist fight.
Yeah, it was a beautifully match made fight, because with your two styles, because Richie, he likes to move forward, tough as nails. He's got heart for miles, which was clear in that third round. But you know, most felt you had the technical advantage in the fight. You're obviously a very exciting fight. People still remember the Contender Series fight. You also have the James Krause cheat code with you, which you didn't have in the Contender Series fight. So I'm wondering if there was anything that surprised you in the fight from his end.
No, man. If anything, it helped having known exactly what he was going to do. He was going to try to walk me down, march me down. He has a really good sense of range. The one thing that did surprise me was his ability to get out of the way of the low kick. The low kick was a huge part of the game plan, and I think I landed one. So it was something that I had to make an adapt, or I had to adapt mid fight. And again, cheat code James Krause, he told me exactly what to do. He's like, let's cut the calf kick and go to something else, and that's what we did. But that was the only thing that surprised me, man. We knew he was going to try to walk me down. That wasn't a surprise, and I'm glad we knew that. And we also knew he had a good sense of range, and we weren't wrong.
Yeah, it was a rough night for the leg kicks, wasn't it? Jeez.
Yeah, jeez, man. I wish they would have let us stay in the arena to watch the rest of the fights, man. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad I didn't see that in person, dude. I'm super cringe when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I'm glad I didn't see that live. Yeah. I heard about it. I had friends and family that came out to support me, which is fucking awesome. But yeah, they were in the arena and they were just talking about the sound it made. And I was like, ah, dude.
I don't. You don't want to hear about that. How many people came out?
Man, I had some teammates. I think in total it was about like 10, 15 people, man. So I definitely felt the love.
That's pretty cool. And we mentioned James. Obviously, he's had a great start to the year from a coaching perspective. We could hear him throughout the first couple of rounds telling you to get off the fence, and you seemed to get cooking in that second round. The third round was amazing, which we'll talk about in a second. But what was the conversation like in the corner between you and James between the second and third rounds? Because whatever he said, it looked like to have lit a fire underneath you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm so glad to have had my coaches on fight week and for the fight like that. That was awesome. It was cool. It definitely made things easier. But yeah, you said it, man. James Krause is a cheat code. I think he's coach of the year. Just a stable of guys he has. Like, I can't think of another coach that would be in contenders besides Trevor Woodman, just for the two title fights from this past weekend. But man, he said everything I needed to hear. And I'm not proud of my performance at all. The one thing I am proud of that I did in the fight was my ability to adapt in battle. I think that in its own is very underrated. I think the highest level fighters are able to do that. Like the Cejudos, like the Henry Cejudo, Marlon Moraes fight comes to mind. The DJ is really good at adapting mid fight. John Jones, and I'm naming like world champions, and I'm not comparing myself to these guys. And I'm hopefully one day I'll be on their level. But I think that tool itself is underrated to be in mid battle and have to change something on the fly. And I did that, man. In between the first and second, I think the cameras picked this up, but I look at James and I'm like, long story short, I pretty much say like, dude, my shit isn't working. Like my primaries aren't working. What do I do? I think the cameras picked up the part where I tell him like, help. What do you want me to do? And he tells me, and I did just that. And that won me the fight, man. I'll take some kudos for that to be able to be receptive to that type of, comments, and then also on his part to tell me what to do, man. And I did exactly what he told me to, and I started landing, and it won me the fight.
Why weren't you proud of the performance? Like, I know fighters, you guys are so hard on yourselves no matter what happens. Like, if you went out there and knocked him out in 30 seconds, like, you'd probably still have something to think negatively about. But why weren't you proud of the performance?
Yeah, you're right in that aspect, right? Like, I think that the really good guys are going to be the world's biggest critic regardless if they go out there and knock him out in the first 10 seconds. But there was a lot of things that I could have done better, man. I just couldn't find my swag in that first round. And I could have met him with bone on bone earlier, man, especially when he's crashing into me, bone on bone, meaning like elbow or knee. We knew that forward pressure was going to be there. And I wish I would have wrestled a bit more, man. I feel like my wrestling is underrated, or my grappling is underrated. And I didn't really show it. So there's a lot of things that I'm going to take away from this, man. Again, I'm glad to get the debut out of the way, but this was a learning experience. And oh yeah, not to mention me being a fucking idiot the last 10 seconds of the fight, trying to be Max Holloway, point to the ground, and then end up getting rocked like bad. Like I was hurt at the end of that fight, man. So it was just me being stupid. See, when you visualize the fight, which I do a lot of visualization, man, I visualize me doing that a million times. And every time I visualize it, the same thing happened. I get fucking clipped. But yeah, you know, in the third round, it's a 10-8 round, and some judges even still gave me a 10-8 for that round. But I got hurt because I was dropping my hands and just slugging. And it's very silly to do. I do think it helped me win the 50 Gs on one hand. So it's kind of like the fight of the night has to be pretty back and forth. So I think that type of back and forthness that happened in that third, where he rocks me at the very end, is key. But I don't know if 50 G's is worth my longevity in this sport. So I'm going to learn from this. I won't do that again, but that's my style, man. My style is bonus friendly. So,
I mean, outside of the final 10 seconds, that third round was bananas, man. I mean, you landed 127 significant strikes. That's the third most landed in a round in UFC history. You also landed the most overall significant strikes in the history of the flyweight division. Davison Figueiredo's fight against Brandon Moreno was the winner. You had two less rounds to do it, and you beat him by over 50 significant strikes. So one fight in, you're already in the record books, despite how the last 10 seconds of that fight went. How does that all feel?
Yeah, Davison who? No, I'm kidding. it feels good, man. It's cool. That's a cool stat. And I saw a tweet that showed like other fighters that are in the same like category or like, you know, just good company. I think DJ was on there. I think Holloway was on there. It was cool. That's a cool stat, man. And I'm into it.
It's obviously good to be in the illustrious company of guys like that. It's probably better to get two checks and a bonus. And I remember, you know, Joe Rogan's interviewing you, you say 50 MF and G's in the post fight right off the bat. You got it for that crazy fight. But as the fight's going on, I'm not sure how much you watch of it, considering the crazy finishes that went down the rest of the way, were you starting to get worried that maybe they would just do four performance bonuses and no fight at night? Were you surprised that you got it?
Dude. Yeah. Every fight, we were watching it back in the hotel room with my coaches. Luckily the UFC, paid for the pay-per-view and had it on, like in the room. Like, so we walked in the room and the fights were playing already. But yeah, every fight I was like, oh, I hope this is the most boring fight ever. every fight right before it started, I'm like, dude, I hope they just wrestle each other for 15 minutes straight. And I was getting really worried with the title fights. I'm like, dude, there's no way like these title fights are gonna be boring. Like, especially Rose and Wiley. But yeah, I was worried until I was told that I won it. So
there you go. Yeah, I mean, the title fights are great. Shevchenko was ridiculous. Rose was ridiculous. And then Usman knocking on Masvidal like that, man. Like, I didn't see that coming from a mile away. Like, a lot of people, like, if Usman wanted a dominant decision, wouldn't it surprise me? If Masvidal knocked Usman out like that, wouldn't it surprise me? But seeing Usman knock Masvidal out like that was jawing, man.
I wonder what the odds were. Yeah, that was insane. That was insane. But you can almost see it coming with the way Masvidal was dropping his hands and trying to like laugh off every strike, man. Like, you got to respect the game, man. And I think Masvidal said that too. He was like, man, I screwed up. Well, who am I to talk? I pointed to the ground and slugged with some dude that I shouldn't be doing that with, you know?
Well, you learned a valuable lesson, but I have to tell you, we host a matchmaking podcast on the site. We record it like the morning after the event, and we always like solicit listener suggestions for different matchups. Like, we kind of get a gauge of what people want to see, especially from the prelims. you, my friend, got a lot of people excited. There are a lot of people who are ready to see you back in there. So many different matchups are thrown our way. I think you got more than anybody else, if we're being honest. But you left them wanting more, Jeff, despite how you feel about the performance overall. And I know you just fought. I know you're on vacation right now, sort of smelling the roses. But perfect world, have you thought about when you want to get back in there? Are there any matchups that have caught your eye?
Yeah. I did have a matchup in mind that I wanted, but dude retired. I wanted to fight Jimmy Flick, or the winner of the Flick Figueroa fight. I'm still down. I forgot who Figueroa was fighting, but not the actual Figueroa, but the Great Value Figueroa. I'll fight the winner of that fight. I'm into it. I like that matchup, but man, I really don't care. I'll leave it up to my coaches. If they like it, I like it. So I'll say yes to anything as long as they say yes first. So
there you go,
as far as when I want to be back, I went into this fight with a couple injuries that I want to get checked out, but if everything's good to go, nothing serious, then ASAP.
And you want to be on another pay-per-view again, right? Like, we got to do this in front of crowds as much as possible. Cause I mean, you were on the Contender Series, no crowd, but having your debut in front of a crowd like that, I'm sure you want that feeling a lot more moving forward.
Yeah, sure. I'll fight in front of 5 people again or 15,000. Don't get me wrong. The experience was sick, man. It was one for the record books, as they say, but man, I got to experience it. Once is enough for me. Obviously there's going to be a lot more, of those experiences, but I don't care where it is. If it is Apex again, I'll fight there. If it's in Singapore, like it was originally supposed to be, I'll fight there. I want experiences, and since I already experienced it, well, I'm okay if it doesn't happen again. But man, I don't really care where I fight. Fight's a fight, whether it's in front of Dana and 5 other people or 15,000.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now, there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/Vox. That's klaviyo.com/Vox.
Jeff Molina, a very exciting up-and-comer in the UFC's flyweight division. That division is great. I can't believe they tried to get rid of that division a few years ago, but Jeff Molina is an exciting guy. A lot of fun potential matchups are in his future. What a fight that was on Saturday. I'm excited to see what is next for him. We know what's next for Ryan Bader. He's going to take on Corey Anderson later on this year in the Bellator Light Heavyweight Grand Prix. And I wanted to get his thoughts on a number of topics, including Scott Coker saying, you know what? We're going to do an interim heavyweight title fight. We don't do interim titles here, but we're going to do one for the heavyweight division. So let's talk to Ryan Bader about that and much more right now. All right, we move ahead to the reigning Bellator heavyweight champion who recently advanced to the semifinals of the Light Heavyweight Grand Prix, a unanimous decision win over Lyoto Machida, and now he is set to meet Corey Anderson in the next round later on this year. Let us say hello to Ryan Bader. Ryan, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. What about you?
Doing great. It's great to have you here. First fight of 2021 is in the books. You took on a super tough guy, a legend in Lyoto Machida, someone you were obviously quite familiar with. You get the win. How does it feel to get back in the win column and spend 25 minutes in there with the guy who got a win over you several years prior?
Yeah, it was good. You know, obviously you want to get that win back, and he's a tricky guy, you know, and so I didn't want to make the same mistakes as I did the first time. And so, you know, that we knew the first round, we had to chill out basically and not rush in like I did the first time. I ended up getting knocked out in 2012. And so saw what I saw at the end of that round, what I needed, and then kind of started taking control of that fight and kind of go from there.
his durability, even at this stage in his career, is pretty unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, yeah. you were landing some big shots, and I'm sure you weren't overly surprised, but were you surprised that he was able to go the full 25 with you?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that, after, the fourth, fifth round. We were expecting him to be tricky and elusive and all that kind of stuff. But, I was on top of him, kind of putting a beating on him. And he would not. A lot of guys like look for a way out, give you a position and you start raining down punches and they'll kind of look for that way out. And he never did. He took those. He was trying to fight back the whole time. At the very end, there was like a minute 50 left. He was pretty tired. He was laying there. Then he just comes back with a back elbow and hits me right in the nose. I was like, oh, come on now. Yeah, but I was surprised. I know he's a veteran. He's a tough guy. He's been in there with everybody. But I was surprised about how durable he was and wanted to have that will to keep fighting.
This is the second one of these Grand Prix that you've been a part of, and I really love them. I feel like it elevates things to another level, especially, this one with some of the names that are involved, and the heavyweight one was really crazy too with some of the names there. But, after being in this game for so long, being a part of these tournaments, sort of knowing what your next move is going to be ahead of time, outside of like when the actual fights are going to happen, do you enjoy these? Like, is it a little bit refreshing to be a part of these Grand Prix?
Yeah, 100%. I enjoyed the heavyweight Grand Prix because I knew the dates basically. And not exactly who, but you can look in that bracket who you could potentially face. So you start diving into these guys and you're able to, be a step ahead. And I love the timing because I know, this year, granted I keep winning, I'm going to fight, in July and October. Whereas if I had just a title fight, you'd fight and then, who's next? We don't know. It could be, 3 months. It could be a year later we're fighting again. So I like, it just keeps me refreshed. It keeps me focused the whole time. So it's not there. I never have a time where I'm like, oh, I don't have a fight on the horizon. I know I do. So that's why I love these tournaments. I love looking at, and the fans do too, the bracket, who's in there, who the possible matchups are. And so I have a lot of fun with these.
You were in attendance for Corey Anderson's win a couple of weeks ago. He'll obviously be next for you in this tournament. What did you think of his performance, sitting not too far away from it?
Yeah, he looked great. The only thing is the guy he fought, nobody really knew, what his level was or what his level is really, so it's hard. But I know because of the guys that Corey's fought in his past, I know how tough he is. We train to get together a little bit. He looked good. He went out there and did his thing, got on top and used his ground and pound, and he's always durable. He's always in shape. I thought he looked really good.
It's one of those fights where, I mean, from a stylistic perspective, obviously like you, he's a great wrestler. Also like you, yeah. He possesses power on the feet, but looking into this fight, like this is one of those fights people look at and be like, oh, this fight hasn't happened already. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it hasn't. So it's kind of weird that it's happening now, but it's just interesting that you're in a Grand Prix. You'll be a win away from fighting for a championship. Yeah. And now you guys are meeting. Is it kind of weird to think about that you spent all this time together in the UFC and now you're fighting in a different organization?
Yeah, exactly. He was always on my radar. And like I said, we trained together, here and there, but he was always on my radar, and I figured that we would, because we were both, top five, top 10 in the UFC forever, that we'd cross paths. But yeah, you never know. I went over to Bellator, and then Bellator started signing a lot of these guys. And so, it's a fight looking forward to. I like the guy, but we have similar styles, and he has a style of a guy that I've fought a bunch, these wrestlers that, that are like me, and I've always done well with that stylistic matchup. I feel like he does a lot of things good, but I just feel like I'm better at him.
So it's looking like July, you said, for this fight?
Yeah, I think they want to kind of keep they're going to wait till after the Romero and Johnson fight to see, because I think they want to keep them together. And I don't know if we do it on the same night, but to give everybody a fair shake, they don't want to, have them fighting in May, and then, if they're barring any injuries or whatever. So it's kind of fluid right now, but they're looking around July, late summer.
Will you be there for that fight as well, for Rumble and Romero?
I don't think so, because it's out at the, the East Coast in Connecticut and stuff, and you got to do the whole quarantine, all that kind of stuff. So
Who do you think wins that fight?
Man, I don't know. You know, I think it's going to be an awesome fight, you know, but we always look forward to these fights that look all crazy on paper. Right. And then it turns out not to be, you know, but I mean, Anthony's going to go in there and try to do what he does, which is throw bombs at you and knock you out. And Romero is just so unpredictable, you know. We'll see if he uses his wrestling and all that. And Romero's great. So that's one of the ones I can't call at all because, no. You know, Johnson has that it factor where he could end the fight at any time. And Romero's super athlete. You know, he's a good striker. He's in better wrestling, but he doesn't use his wrestling all the time, you know, but will he with Anthony? So that's what I'm excited for that fight for sure.
Yeah. It's going to be pure chaos and I'm here for it, Ryan, but,
oh yeah.
So let me ask you about this. Corey had made some waves recently. He tweeted out something to the effect that, you know, UFC gave him a career, Bellator gave him the life that he's made, mm-hmm. you know, all this extra money, more. I think he said like double he made in 15 fights with the UFC with bonuses. He seems like, obviously, he's very happy with the decision to move to Bellator. One, what do you make of those comments? And two, like, how do you feel about your decision to sign with Bellator? Because this is 4 years now, right? We're approaching the 4-year anniversary of that pen hitting the paper.
Yeah, I mean, he's right, you know, and that's why I came over too, you know, and my first contract with them. And then I was able to renew my contract after I beat Fedor, you know, and he's definitely right. That's why I love it over here. We're treated really well, and, you know, on the financial side too, you know. Yeah, people look at what your disclosed pay is and all that. And they're like, oh, they're not even getting paid, you know, but that's, you know, that's BS. There's a bunch of other stuff going on. And so I'm super happy with my contract for sure. And, you know, I have those same sentiments.
We saw Vadim Nemkov get a win over Phil Davis. That was a fun fight. And you've been very clear that, you know, I know people are asking you about rematches and redemption tours and things like that, but you've been very clear. You have no preference who you fight in this Grand Prix. If you get the rematch with him, great. If not, all good. You have your own things to worry about. What did you make of his performance against Phil?
Yeah, he looked good. You know, he was, I was interested to see, you know, because in their first fight, it was a 3-round fight, right? And Phil got him really, really tired and had him in bad positions in the third round. And so I was excited to see, you know, a 5-round fight with them. And I was actually doing the analyst desk at the fight, you know, and we were talking about, we're like, you know, Phil needs to go in there and he needs to threaten the takedown, get a takedown in one of the early rounds. Because we think he wins the later rounds, you know, but can he steal a round in the beginning? But Nemkov had really good output. You know, he had his foot on the gas the whole time. Good jab. And then, you know, he has a good little sneaky right hand, obviously his kicks. But I was impressed with his output, you know, and on the desk there, like I was saying with Phil, you know, I was watching it and I know Phil liked Phil a lot. And we're like, come on, Phil, like faint to take that, go get one, go try and make him think about it. It was just a little too late, you know, and then ended up being a closer fight than I thought it was. You know, I thought Nemkov, you know, had maybe 4-1, you know, in the rounds, but he looked good.
So after your win over Lyoto Machida, Scott Coker speaks with the media and he said that they're planning to book an interim heavyweight title fight pretty soon and an announcement will be forthcoming. And, you know, we're approaching the 2-year mark since you've been able to defend your title, but, you know, between the Grand Prix and the pandemic, like that's completely understandable. The undisputed title will remain on your mantle, but when you found out that we're going to do an interim title, how did you react to that?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. It is what it is. You know, we were prepared to defend the heavyweight title in early March. You know, we thought they were coming back in early March. It was like, all right, we'll defend the heavyweight title. Obviously, I lost my light heavyweight, but then they said, you know, they merged with, you know, Showtime or whatever, so it took a little longer. And then they were doing this Grand Prix, and they asked if I would come down. So just like the heavyweight one. You know, they said, hey, you can keep your light heavyweight belt, come up, do this Grand Prix, you know, and end up winning both. So I said the same thing with this one, you know, don't worry about the heavyweight. You're still the champ. You know, we might have to figure some things out, but please, you know, come join this tournament. And so doing what Bellator is asking, and I want to be part of this tournament anyway. And so if they got to do an interim, you know, fight for interim champ, for a heavyweight, that's fine. It just makes the next fight bigger, 2 belts on the line, basically. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah, it's just more of a, I'm not going to say glorified, but a just kind of bonus to a number one contenders fight, right? Like fighters can make a little more money.
Yeah, you know, I have the belt still, you know, and so it is what it is, you know. So, and I kind of put that on their plate too. I was supposed to fight Tim Johnson, I said, that's not up to me. It's up to Bellator, obviously, but maybe Tim Johnson wants to wait, you know, for the shot, you know, cause, you know, we were pretty much almost booked with that, you know? So, I guess they want to do that. So I assume it's him versus somebody else, you know? And so it is what it is.
Who do you think should get that other spot, you think?
I don't know. You know, I'd have to kind of, there's a few, like looking at the rankings on the Russian dude, maybe the Molden, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but maybe those two.
Yeah. I mean, Tim should definitely be there. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, Tim should be. I mean, Tim's earned it. You know, we talked, like I said, when we were almost booking that fight, you know, I reached out to him and said, hey, you know, let's do this. We'll do the fight, whatever. And then the light heavyweight deal came up. So, yeah, him and somebody else.
So let's discuss something that you've been announced to be a part of recently. You're now part of the clean energy team. You're joining the squad with Kill Cliff Energy Drink and Get Biofuel. So how did this all come together for you? And how excited are you being involved in something like this?
Yeah, you know, I've always had a good relationship with sponsors. You know, some of the fighters will just, you know, turn and burn, basically, you know, wear a t-shirt for somebody, this and that. I mean, a lot of the clean energy crew from like the ethanol side, I've known and been with them for, man, almost like 12, 15 years. And we became good friends or good people. And the same with Kill Cliff, you know, kind of new Kill Cliff team. But went out and met with those guys, you know, we all have the same mindset. And, you know, I love the Kill Cliff stuff, their CBD drinks, all that kind of stuff. So I was saying, I don't like to just have a sponsor just to get a little check. You know, I want to be involved with these kind of companies, you know, and so, yeah, I'm enjoying it for sure.
So what are some of the things that you're going to be doing sort of in representation of this whole thing, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, you know, well, Kill Cliff always has some cool stuff going on. You know, we were going to do a dog sledding race, but I had my fight, so I missed that. So that's, I love, you know, doing stuff, you know, I want to be a part of, you know, their whole team too, as far as going out and doing the dog sledding stuff, doing this, you know, we, with the Get Biofuel, all those guys are up in South Dakota, you know, and we'd go up there, we'd have like a pheasant hunt and stuff like that. And I know these guys, there's a lot of them are my friends and all that. And so that's what I try to surround myself with.
And I think part of this as well, because, you know, like myself, you're, you know, we want to leave things behind as parents, as fathers, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, we want to create positive and safe environments for them, leave them in a better place, so to speak. Was that like a big part of this, of you saying yes and agreeing to this and being a part of this as well?
Oh, 100%. You know, with the Get Biofuel, you know, it's bigger in the Midwest, and hopefully it'll start coming out. You know, I'm on the West Coast, basically, in Arizona. Hopefully start coming out and rolling out to the rest of the nation. But yeah, it's just clean, renewable energy, you know, and, you know, I've been around a bunch of their plants, in the Midwest and stuff like that. And so, you know, on that side, and then, you know, with Kill Cliff, you know, their whole deal too, is they give back to Navy SEAL Foundation. And I work with a lot of the, military and military groups and whatnot. We've given a lot, to different, you know, donations, different charities, you know, I get to do cool stuff. Like, went to the Navy SEAL land warfare class, you know, this and that. So I just like being involved in that and, just kind of helping out and giving back however I can.
Best Kill Cliff flavor.
I like the purple CBD drink. It's called the goat.
The goat.
Yeah.
That's perfect. So there you go. Can I just ask you about this? I don't know why. It's the news cycle. It drives you crazy. But did you watch the fight between Ben Askren and Jake Paul? Was that something that was even on your radar?
Well, I just saw like the, you know, the clips after, but I didn't watch. I didn't get the fight or anything like that, you know, but it was everywhere after. But yeah, just kind of a circus, you know, and I like Ben, but I kind of had a feeling that was going to happen. You know, Ben's not a boxer. He's a great wrestler, great, you know, great on the ground. But going into a straight boxing match, you know, and Jake Paul, say what you say about him, whatever. But, you know, he's an athlete. He's big. He's taking it very seriously. And so I was like, man, this is not going to be very good. And then I didn't realize it was going to be that bad. But yeah, it was bad.
Now he's picking fights with DC, man. Like, what's going on here? Now he's going to come pick fights with you? Like, what is this?
For his angle, you know, he's getting the eyeballs, you know, he's getting paid. So more power to them, you know, but a lot of the MMA communities, they're not too happy.
No, I mean, he's found a niche. People are talking.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. I guess success for his end, but
yeah.
Now we have to keep talking about it. I don't know. But
so people are going to, you know, they don't always have to like you, and just like the heel, right? If people hate you, they want to pay, watch your fight to watch you get beat up. And that's how it works. And he's doing it right.
Great having the Bellator heavyweight champion Ryan Bader on the show for the first time. Love the Grand Prix. This light heavyweight Grand Prix is just crazy. The fight with Corey Anderson will be fun. He's saying sometime in July. We'll see. I know an official date hasn't been announced yet, but we get the final opening round matchup next Friday, May 7th. Anthony Johnson versus Yoel Romero. I can't believe we're seeing this fight, and I'll be there for that event. I'm very excited about that. So lots of coverage. My first event working for MMA Fighting that I'm going on the road to cover. So hopefully this is the first of many, and I'm excited about that. But of course, we get another big week in MMA this week. One on TNT4 coming up on Wednesday. Ang Lang Tsang defends his light heavyweight title against the man who beat him for his middleweight title, Rainier DeRitter. That is an interesting matchup. Of course, Vitaly Big Dash tested positive for COVID-19. He was out of the fight. DeRitter taking this fight on really short notice, a little over a week. So that's a fun fight. Eddie Alvarez is back after his DQ loss got overturned to a no contest. That was interesting news. And the PFL is back on Thursday after a wild night to kick off their season. Anthony Pettis lost to Clay Collard. We saw Bubba Jenkins beat Lance Palmer. We saw Marcin Held lose to Natasha Schultz. I mean, holy moly. Crazy. Crazy. Three massive upsets. Of course, the main event for Thursday's card for the PFL is Rory McDonald's PFL debut. It's finally happening. Takes on Curtis Millender. UFC is back on Saturday as well. UFC Vegas 25. That one headlined by Dominic Reyes versus Yuri Prochazka. That's going to be a fun card. Got some interviews coming up for that card as well. You'll find those later on this week on the MMA Fighting YouTube channel. We got one more guest to get to, but before that happens, just once again, a big thank you to all of you for watching and listening to the program, to all of our programs. The post-fight coverage on Saturday night, really happy with the numbers there. Thank you so much for that. It means a lot. And a big thank you to Casey Lydon, of course, on the production. Cool Alex and Jose Youngs on the graphics and the social media. Just heroes all around. But listen, have a heck of a week, everybody. We wrap things up with my chat from this past Thursday with Frank Mir. All right, so real quick, just to address what I'll surely see in the comments, I'm on location right now in Boston at my parents' house, so I'm not in Command Center 2.0, so apologies for the different look, for the lack of video and audio quality on my end, but let us say hello once again to the former UFC heavyweight champion, Frank Mir, who stepped into the boxing ring this past Saturday. He took on a former two-time Cruiserweight World Champion in Steve Cunningham, and he went the distance with him on the Triller Fight Club car, which is something he should be incredibly proud of. Frank Mir, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. And actually, I thought the fight was 4-2. I had it 58-56 when I was walking in the corner. And I was like, well, maybe one of the rounds I kind of stole at the end because I landed that good shot at the end of the third. So I'm thinking, oh, maybe one went my way and I got this to a draw. And then when they started announcing the scores of 60-54, I'm like, oh, come on, guys. Really? Not one round? I mean, I know it's boxing versus MMA, but be fair.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I thought it was a little bit closer than the scorecards indicated, but congratulations, man. I know it's not typical to congratulate somebody after a loss, but I feel in this case, it's completely warranted. How does this experience all feel a few days later?
You know, it's been a great experience. You know, obviously my stock has gone up more in this loss than most of my victories. And I think that's because really, honestly, people are really appreciative of the journey. They realize the battle that, you know, that I went out there and fought, what I put on the line. Obviously they can see how hard I've been working to go ahead and go out there and do this on a technical side, on a nutrition side, on a lifting side. And so, you know, I think that's actually probably is a good trend. There was a lot of things that happened that night that I think are bad examples to our children. And, I think that at least that people can appreciate that going out there and being a warrior, regardless of the results, is something that we can admire in our culture. And I'm very proud to represent that and help guide other people to go and say, hey, look, man, it's not always about winning and losing. You know, sometimes it's about how you play the game and how you fight and how you show up. And those are things that are within our control. So I feel like that takes stress off of people to go, hey, just go out there and perform as well as you can and let the chips fall where they may. and you know, and look at the, my situation that I'm at.
I agree with a lot of what you just said. So I'm curious, when you say that there are certain things that happened that weren't great examples for the children, what do you mean specifically?
Well, I get that it was also a concert, and there's a certain element to the concert, you know, genre that, you know, that maybe would make a lot of parents of their, you know, 11 and 15 year old kids uncomfortable. I've never felt uncomfortable bringing my children to a fight, and my kids go to concerts all the time. But the atmosphere and kind of how that the, especially, you know, the pundits, whatever you want to call them, the power of the hosts were basically behaving, the atmosphere they would have set if that had been a sold out arena, I don't think I'd be comfortable having my children there, to say the least, you know, as far as, you know, hey, look, I'm not anti-drugs at all as far as weed, you know, all the more power to you. Personally, it's not my cup of tea, but that's just because it makes me lazy and I want to just eat and sleep. And I already have the urges to do that. But I have no urge with other people. I think it should completely be legal. I'm very pro marijuana, but I don't know. Just, you know, everybody being high on a show, you know, drinking and hanging out and partying. I'm just like, that's a little too much, guys. You know what I mean? I mean, I think there has to be certain people have a certain character that we completely get and understand, like Snoop Dogg. I get it. That's him. That's who he is. And, you know, if you hire Snoop Dogg and you expect something else, you're the idiot. You know what I mean? Like, and he brings a huge fan base and he's the cool guy. But as far as like some of the other guys that should have been brought on, and I don't really blame Triller for that. You know, they brought Al Bernstein on to be a legitimate boxing host. They brought on De La Hoya to be a legitimate guy. Obviously, you can't control in what shape he showed up. But I still wonder how come the producer listening in, watching this, doesn't go, hey, man, let's go and let him know that he's having a rough night. We're going to cut it short. We're going to get him out of here because, you know, he's embarrassing us. He's embarrassing himself. And he's just not he's upsetting a lot of people. I mean, if you're sitting there with your phone, you can see that it almost overshadowed my fight that I'm having as MMA versus boxing in a boxing match. And now the topic became how awful and what the hell is Oscar on?
Yeah, it's funny because I talked to Ray Flores, who is one of the play-by-play guys, about that situation. He said basically, like, listen, Oscar's not fighting for 2 months. He was having fun, so I kind of let him go. And, you know, maybe in hindsight, he regrets that. But is it true?
No, because there still have to be a professionalism to show up. I mean, Right. Hey, you want to cut loose and let go. There's people that have met me out when I'm out after a fight. I have a couple drinks. I've commentated shows. And afterwards, if you see me at a bar, I'm having a beer. I'm smoking a cigar. That's when it's time to play. I think that was a bad example to show children that you don't play while you're supposed to be working. I mean, we can all have fun while we're at work. I enjoy my job and I commentate. You know, people could hear me in the past for ACB, you know, when I'm being commentating with Brian Lacey. We were making jokes, having fun. But as far as cracking out the champagne before the show's over with, no, you don't party before it's done. Like, get your work done, be a professional, and then, hey, cut loose and enjoy yourself.
So I'm curious because one of my colleagues was there covering the card, and he said he could hear the commentary throughout the surround sound speakers in the arena. Could you hear his commentary while you were fighting?
I did. And it was distracting to me a little bit. I was more upset when they were talking shit about Cunningham. You know, like now, you know, first he's going to murder me, and I expected the first round or two. But then as I'm listening to them talk about Cunningham, it's like, wait a minute, you guys aren't giving me credit for what I'm doing. You're just trying to say that he's no good, that this guy is a chump. Like, to me, it was just such a loser mentality on how to commentate the fight that I'm like, really? I would expect more from somebody who's been in here at the highest levels. So that was upsetting. And then the other thing is that in the judges, they got to own up on that. Really, not one round you gave me because you were listening to the commentary and it was being piped in and it influenced the judges. One of the judges, I think, had it the most correct when he had us, the 58-56 score, you know, 4-2, you know. But as far as it was a shutout, 6 rounds, I didn't win a single round. Like, that I didn't agree with. And I felt that was completely on the commentators. Well, it's not their fault that they're influencing the judges should not be influenced by that. They need to channel out and just focus on the fight itself. But that's what happened.
When we last spoke, you talked about like the challenges that it was getting into the boxing and you were starting to enjoy it. So I'm curious, like, what was more difficult, like the training, the build up to the fight itself, the preparation, or kind of the in-fight mentality where, you know, it's not MMA, it's boxing. You can't just go in there and shoot for takedowns, things like that. Like, what was more difficult for you?
That actually was. It was funny because, you know, you train hard when you're sparring in the gym, but it's never 100%. There's never that I am trying to completely put this guy to sleep. And obviously that trigger gets pulled during the fight. So it put me in an elevated state of mind. And then I found out that I was battling myself. Not on the outside, as far as my jab, my cross, a lot of those things are extremely similar to what I do in MMA. And I was using the same boxing I would use in an MMA fight. I didn't really specialize to be a boxer. I was being an MMA fighter using my MMA skills that were legal. But then when I got inside, I thought it would be easy to shut that off, and it wasn't. And it made it me a little bit slower on the inside.
All good.
Sorry, you guys see me?
I did.
Oops. There we go.
There we go.
So anyway, so that was a battle. Every time I was inside, not holding the back of his head when I threw punches, not digging an overhook, turning and throwing shots. Even so, not so much as not trying to throw a knee or an elbow, which I accidentally think I threw one over in my head. They were like, but and not kicking, but just my brain seeing it and identifying them, having to constantly say, no, don't do that. No, can't do that. Stop, stop. Because the one thing about the state of Georgia, the athletic commission, the rule on the books is if I get disqualified by a foul, so if I foul my opponent, and it could be unintentional as far as, let's say I step behind his leg and I throw a punch and I sweep him. Well, he blows his knee, fights over with it. That's deemed a foul. I lose my whole purse. And I just knew that would be a difficult conversation to have with the wife. So that distracted me a little bit during the fight. Maybe after a few more boxing matches, I can clear my mind of that. Because I don't typically have that much of an issue in jiu-jitsu and when I wrestle not to hit people. But boxing is just, you know, very similar to fighting as far as this type of intensity of hitting each other. And I was definitely struggling not to do MMA.
Did you kind of fall in love with it? Because it sounds like you want to do it some more.
Well, I think it's definitely something that made me. Even today I was sparring at Syndicate. And now this is the first time I got to spar with kicks and takedowns all together. And right off the bat, I mean, my legs felt a little fatigued from throwing kicks, but I threw a lot of high volume to get kind of break the ice again. But as far as the improvement, my hands are so much better right now that helped build me as a martial artist. So, of course, I'm going to continue to do boxing matches. And actually, I'm going to add in, I would like to do some kickboxing matches because I think those will also relate very well to MMA.
You said one of the most important reasons you took this opportunity was that you wanted to make your children proud. And I know your daughter, Bella, was in your corner. You wanted to make her proud and you wanted her to say that she was proud of you when you left the squared circle after a job well done. What did she say to you? What was your family's reaction after the fight itself?
Oh, they were ecstatic. They were very much like, wow, Dad, you know, my wife even said, she goes, honestly, Frank, I was like, just don't get knocked down the first round. Don't get knocked down the first round. You know, and then the second round hits and she says, oh my God, you made it into the second round. You know, and then every round she just got more excited. And then she was just almost ready to start crying for me. She's all, baby, you did it. You said you wanted to go out there and show that you could box with a world champion. And you're in the heat of what you love. She sees how much I sacrifice. And also, you know, my wife's in there crying, going like, he's doing it. He's living his life right now.
What have you made? I mean, because, you know, being in MMA so long, the MMA fans, the MMA community, it's almost like the hardest group to please and get positive feedback from. But you've gotten a lot of praise, a lot of props, as the kids say. How has that made you feel?
It feels good. You know, obviously being recognized as somebody that can represent the martial arts community because I'm an MMA fighter. You know, a lot of times some people get that confused. They call me a jiu-jitsu guy. I'm like, guys, I've done well in jiu-jitsu. But I'm as much as a jiu-jitsu guy now as I'm a boxer, right? I wouldn't start calling myself a professional boxer, even though technically I am. MMA is my love, and that's what I really want to push up to the forefront and represent. And so the fact that I took on this role and represented mixed martial arts for a second time in my life, where I was the guy versus, you know, the MMA guy, you know, holding our honor, you know, I'm glad that I was able to represent, and especially – obviously, you know, I was disappointed with what happened to Astrin, but had we gone 0-2 that night, as far as I know, I still lost, but I feel like at least we put a win in the MMA market for me, for what I was able to do to help pull the weight for the rest of the guys.
Yeah. I mean, if you're an MMA fan, obviously the main event, it was an unfortunate ending, but I remember that the last conversation we had, you said you had a lot of respect for what Jake Paul has been doing. He's been taking it seriously and he goes out and stops Ben Askren in under 2 minutes. What did you think of it overall?
Yeah, actually, I was impressed with, look, Jake Paul, you know, and Logan Paul, they've made their name by being controversial and putting out different videos in their marketing. My cup of tea, no, it's not my style. But you know what? I realize that there's lots of different people in the world. There's all different kinds of styles. And hey, there's different pizza for everybody, right? And so, but the one thing that I can say about, you know, them is that they train hard. He shows up to the gym. He puts the work in. He does what his coaches. You know, I'm friends with BJ Flores. The guy does whatever he asks him to do. He goes, hey, we got to wait. Today, you know, we're going for a run. We're going for a run. I'm going to have you spar these two pros, three rounds each. He does it. And so that in itself is a good example to the rest of the guys. Like, hey, he's jumping in there and boxing, and he might not have taken the most conventional route, but he's paying his dues. He's fighting and training hard. He's bleeding. He's sweating. I have nothing but I have nothing but love and respect for that.
Would you compete on another Trilla card like this again?
Yeah, there's a few things that I would like them to make some adjustments on that I think just needs to be brought to their attention. Obviously, they have Melissa Henricks, who's phenomenal on the fight side. You know, their matchmaker Peter was phenomenal to work with. So a lot of the people had all the best of intentions, but this was a crazy monster that no one had ever been a part of. I mean, so you have, you know, production down there that's responsible for the music video or whatever, the music industry aspect of it. You have the commentators and what they're doing with the celebrities. Then you have the fight production trying to go on. And all these guys are trying to intermingle and work together. I mean, at one point I was impressed it actually went off, just because I've never seen so many moving parts. And so are there some hiccups? Absolutely. You know, I would like the show to be able to be watched a little bit more of a general audience. I feel that they hit their market audience, but I'm also a little disappointed that I feel like, and not from, you know, a lot of it has to do with what Oscar did. But I mean, a lot of I think it was a little too excessive with the weed and everything else and the drinking and the partying. And it's like, hey, you know what, you know, you're alienating a lot of our mainstream America right now. You know, let's kind of, you know, maybe tone it down a little bit. Let's have flavor to this, but we don't have to be it to where, you know, as a parent, I'm feeling uncomfortable if my kids are watching this.
I know you were originally supposed to fight Antonio Tarver. Is there a part of you that was kind of bummed you didn't get that opportunity? Or is it almost better that you got to fight Steve Cunningham, who a lot of people figured was a tougher matchup for you?
Oh, Steve was absolutely, at this point in his career, a tougher matchup. I feel like, you know, Tarver was a much more winnable prospect for me than Cunningham. But that being said, you know, I mean, Tarver has a much more of a household name. You know, look, he has wins over Roy Jones Jr. You know, he's a light heavyweight champ of the world. You know, even as an amateur, he was a world champion in 96. And he was also in movies. I mean, he got to do the movie role, you know, a pretty major role in Rocky VI, which I really loved that movie. It was awesome. And you know, as far as name value, it was huge. But Triller brought so many eyes on it that it kind of made up for the fact that I didn't have that superstar marquee name. And I think Cunningham was a phenomenal dance partner. He sounds somebody that I've exchanged information with him. Like, next time I'm getting close to a boxing match, I would love to be able to go out there and spar with him and pick his brain and use him as somebody to help set me up as far as make me a better boxer.
So I know you just fought on Saturday, and you know, in MMA, we let you savor the flavor for very little time before we ask what's next. But do you kind of have an idea? Like, I know you signed with BKFC last year. Do you think your next fight will be with them? Like, how do you kind of see this next step going in terms of your competition?
Yeah, it's either BKFC or actually Malky might have something going here in June. I don't want to let too much out. I don't know how much he doesn't want to talk about, but possibly a fight in Florida, where I would really love to be able to fight, because, you know, my father's from Cuba. I have a lot of extended family there in Florida. And so I would like to be able to go there and possibly do an MMA match next, or BKFC match, the bare knuckle, which, if I do the bare knuckle, I'm honestly really interested in showcasing against a high level boxer. So that way I can also show that, hey, look, if we're both on our stand-up hands, if you let me go ahead and hit from the clinch, this isn't going to be as close as it was in our boxing match.
Will you watch UFC 261 on Saturday?
Of course. Yeah, I keep up with all the fights. I do the best I can.
There you go. Thoughts on the main event, on the main event between Usman and Masvidal? Is there any, can you see this fight going any differently than the first time? I know they got full camps now, but do you see this fight going any differently?
Yeah, I think that Usman's a monster. That guy is phenomenal. And, you know, right now I had to put money on it. War to him. You know, he's somebody who's very underrated, able to come, you know. So the guy's grappling is able to be good enough to hopefully he can stay off Usman and make this a stand-up war, which Usman's awesome at too. Great switch stancing, cutting different levels. But I think it's going to be still a hard fight for Mahmoud to be much closer. And I wouldn't be surprised if he pulls it off.
Frank, I appreciate the time, man. I know you're getting ready to go train again because you're a wild man, but I think I speak for pretty much everybody in the MMA community, in the media space. We tip the proverbial cap to you, sir, for your showing on Saturday. Well done. I know you wanted to go in there and get the victory, but this is a victory in itself. So congratulations again. Thank you for the time, and all the best to you. Congratulations to Bell as well.
You got to take the mic. Sure. Hey, kids, he was asking, did I win? Did you guys, as far as, did I earn your pride? Yeah. We're all training together, hanging out as a family, and they say they're proud of me, so we're good. I won.
That's better than any win in itself, man.
Better than any amount of money or anything else. Yes.
By the way, did I see Bella added to the trophy case? Is that accurate?
As far as
wrestling, didn't she win?
She did. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know that. I spoke to you about that yet. I mean, I've done interviews on it. Bella became the national champ here 2 weekends ago. Was it 3 weeks ago? So she won nationals, which was a phenomenal match. I couldn't have written it better. Like, I'm like, Bella, when they make a movie about your life, this scene is going to make people cry. Because here she goes out there. She's going to get her head wrapped up. She's more established as a wrestler, as one thing's longer than Bella has. She goes out there and they give her a takedown at the beginning, which I've watched a couple times. I said it was a takedown. But so she's on bottom. The girl saw that the shoulder was taped and was smart. She went after Bella and was able to turn her twice. Bella basically spent the first period not getting pinned, you know, as the clock ran out. And then, so we're down 8-0. Bella gets up. McGregor, her wrestling coach, fired her up, talked to her about what needed to be done. I calmed her back down. When she looked over at me, I was like, hey, just start over, man. Just, you know, reset. And she went out there, picked top, which people that know wrestling knows you normally don't do that. And she went out there and stuck her in 30 seconds. And the girl was a legitimately tough girl. So, I mean, to do what she did to win the way she did, like, I mean, it had me. I went in the locker room. I went and cried for those. So I didn't embarrass her.
Amazing. Congratulations to her. Congratulations to you, Frank. I appreciate the time. And enjoy the training, my man.
Thank you so much. All right, man.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andre Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.